Okay. Okay, welcome to the Oceano Community Services District meeting for January 27th. Saya, can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Angelou?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
I think she's just running a little late.
And President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. All right. Let's do the flight salute. We'll do it real slow and wait for Karen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Karen's been doing the flag salute so long I almost forgot. Okay. Anybody have any changes to the agenda, additions?
Madam President, no change. I just want to note that on page 31 of 82, agenda item 8A says it's agenda item 8B. It says we have two agenda items, 8B. The agenda itself is correct. It was just a clerical, technical on page 31. That should say agenda item 8A.
Oh, all right. Okay, great. So here.
And they should all say 2016 rather than 2015, but.
Well, we'll just make all those corrections as we're going through it. Okay, great. So, if everybody's okay with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Okay, we're going to move into public comment now. First slip I have is from Mr. Donald Richards.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Donald Richards. I'm a longstanding resident of this area for over 45 years. I don't look it, but yeah, I am 45 years old.
I know the feeling.
I am an employee of IHSS, which is in-home health care services at the County of San Luis Obispo. I am taking care of a senior vet who's over 67 years old who had a stroke at 1633 Front Street, space number 9. Been doing that for over a year now. I've been parking in the back of the facility. Had not had one single problem with anybody. That has came to my attention that is February 2nd of next month. Nobody will be allowed to park in the back anymore. They are sending out memos. I spoke to Pablo just the other day. He's been kind of sick for a few days. He asked me to get a form 501c3 Corp, which is for a nonprofit organization, which I am not a part of a nonprofit. I am part of the County of San Luis Obispo, which makes me invalid for getting that form. I would like to continue parking in the rear because if I didn't park there, I would have to park in front of the store down the street about three blocks. And it really makes it inconvenient because in the back of my car I have a wheelchair, which I move the individual around from town to town, and it makes it kind of inconvenient to have to walk down there. I do know that there has been some problems in the back of the facility. One of the problems was with a Ford truck that had a transmission leak that the fire department had to go put some stuff underneath of it. That individual is no longer living in that complex anymore, and I also understand that there's been some people knocking down some boards in the back to get to their vehicles in the back. I'm not part of that. I am a respectable citizen in this area. Like I said, I've been here for a very long time. As a matter of fact, when I walk to my vehicle, the newspaper is actually at this back door, and I will actually pick up the newspaper and put it in front of the fire department where it's supposed to go, and they've actually expressed their gratitude for me doing that. I am also an employee of Arnie's ATV Rentals in Oceano for Gail Marshall, so I do work on the weekends. So I'm not there constantly all the time. I'm not there at 3 o'clock in the morning on my phone trying to disrupt anybody. Like I said, I'm 45 years old. I try not to make any notice to anybody. And that's about all I have. I would like to know what I need to do to maybe pursue a parking spot in the back here, make it a little bit more convenient so I can take care of this individual a little bit more.
Right. Well, I think that you have all of our empathy on this situation. Unfortunately, we have had a lot of problems in the back. But can I ask, and staff, you can direct differently if you'd like, can I ask that you try to work with the staff a little bit more and see if there's, you know, any other parking in the area? I know that there's a lot across the street, but I know, like you said, you have heavy equipment in the back of your vehicle and stuff, which makes it inconvenient still. So I'm not quite sure, because of the past, that we could just waive it for you and not open the doors and have, you know, other apartment complexes and parking you know, there's been a lot of overflow and people will park back there and then leave their cars for months at a time. So not sure what to do.
The item's not on the agenda, Madam President, so there's really not much to do tonight. Certainly we can continue to follow up.
Oh, as a board member, I'll keep thinking about it, and I'll look around and see if there's a better place that you can park that will help you insisting to care for the person. I think that's probably the best that we can do right now.
Okay. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Clemens.
I hate turning people away.
Good evening, board. Hey, I'm here. Obviously, I work at the Sand District. Not the spokesman, so I can't speak to policy within the Sand District, but I can speak to what happens at the plant. What I want to do right now is invite this entire board to the plant. And one of the reasons I'm doing that is because over the last couple of weeks, I've heard a lot of disparaging comments come from this board, most of them inaccurate. And I thought about it, and I realized that the people who are doing the most talking haven't even spent 10 minutes at the plant. So what I'm here to do is offer each and everyone here to come to the plant, spend time, make phone calls like I said, so that there's no confusion. There seems to be a lot of confusion about what's going on at the plant. What's going on at the plant is, over the last 2 years, we've increased our cash balance by $1.5 million. We've improved our standing with the water board to the point where they told our engineer it's a pleasure for us to call. We've helped move a lot of homeless out of the area. We've done a lot of good things at the plant. But somehow, by the time it gets back to you guys, there's something dark going on at the plant. When I hear dark, I kind of wonder what the inference there is, too. Miss Angela, I heard you last week when President was talking. Yeah, you know, I remember I used to not get good information. Mm-hmm. That was then. That's not now.
Oh, I know. I know.
All you have to do is call.
No problem. I understand.
It's kind of frustrating to hear a board sit here and make disparaging comments about another board in another district, and none of you guys have spent any time at the plant. Except for Matt. You're right, except for Matt. So I would hope that if you guys have any questions, give me a call. We want to straighten it out. For instance, last week I looked back and I heard Brendan Lucy say, well, how could they pay Mr. Knutson without him completing it? At that point, we hadn't paid him. You know, there's a lot of things I hear. I'm not going to go through the list. I know President Lucy, a lot of times at our meeting, she expresses she's very confused. And, you know, we've been very successful at that plant. And I don't know if success confuses people. We've done things that I'm sure Director Guerrero agreed that nobody expected. We've been successful beyond anybody's expectation. So I want to invite you guys out. I'd like for you guys to come out. I want you guys to see what's going on at the plant. And so that when the comments fly out from behind the dais over there, that they're accurate, and that they're on, you know, not somebody's frustrated anger. Okay? All right. Thank you.
Mr. Clemens, do you want... Are you going to coordinate a site visit, or do you want individual board members to call you?
It's however you'd like. It's an open invitation. However you would like, I will facilitate a visit from each and every one of your board members or your board as a whole. It doesn't matter to me. Okay. Come out, find out what's really going on. Let's get this straight. Let's make sure we have... accurate comments from the day from this point on, if we can. That would be the best thing for everyone.
Thank you. Charles. Good evening.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you. I'm here to give an update on the current status of the Phillips 66 oil train terminal proposal. I think as many of you, well, most of you know that February 4th and 5th, the Planning Commission is opening up their public hearings on the proposal. They are planning for 2 days of hearings, which will probably extend into at least two more. Right now, we know that we have probably enough people coming to testify to fill up about 4 or 5 days. The County Planning Department staff issued their report and recommendation on the project. These are the folks who managed the environmental impact report, who spent a year and a half on it, managed the subcontracts, and their report and recommendation to the Planning Commission is very clear. Deny the project, and deny it for numerous reasons, not the least of which are the 11 Class 1 environmental impacts. The project is clearly out of compliance with all sorts of dimensions of the county's general plan, the South County specific plan, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Planning Commission, once they get all the testimony, where they go with that. But the staff has spoken very clear and very loud. I know that you all have quite an agenda for the beginning of the year here. I'm hoping that as we get into March that you will see your way to agendizing the project and discussing it and taking a stand on behalf of the folks in Oceano as the government that represents us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charles. Ms. Tacker?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I think that train that has become the opposition to this project is one that you want to get on. I did look at the correspondence in the staff report, and I don't see anything from Oceano. And as I've said before, you're the first in line should there be an accident. And your infrastructure that belongs to the community is at risk. And there are agencies and special districts that have written letters expressing concerns about the project, and yours isn't there. It's just baffling to me. I know that there was an attempt to have a special meeting. I'd like to see you continue that effort because not only will it be at the Planning Commission, I understand they've rented the Fremont Theater to hold extra people. I think that's exciting because I've just never seen that kind of out. It's amazing. But what I, you know, Planning Commission, deny or approve, whatever, it's going to go to the board. And then it's going to be heard there. Deny or approve, either way, it's going to the Coastal Commission. And if you don't think that the current politics around the dismissal of the potential dismissal of the executive director of the California Coastal Commission has nothing to do with P66, I would guarantee you are wrong. They are involved. This is a lot of money that's at stake. The other subject I'd like to touch on is the Knutson Report, and I'd like to see your board actually have a presentation here. I'd like you all to read it, study it, and then reflect on how Mr. Wallace was the district engineer for this district. Some of you may not know or remember, but if you go back and do some auditing of your own invoices from the Wallace Group, I think you might find some of the same practices were happening when he was your district engineer. And those are public funds. And if there was any anomalies, let's just say, or irregularities, that money is due your community. And I think it's your job to look into it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anybody else who'd like to speak on public comment for items not on the agenda? Okay. Well, I'm going to take this opportunity to make an announcement. I know that a lot of people have noticed that the lagoon is extremely full. And it's about even with the road, and in some places it's spilling over into the roadways. And particularly on the island, the backside of the island, Meadow Creek area. So several community members got together in the Oceano District, some of the staff here, some of the board, some of the other community members got together with our supervisor, Lynn Compton, and she was able to get the emergency permit submitted, her staff was. And so Friday morning they will start dredging. They're going to tunnel it out. Can you explain this a little bit better, Mr. Ogren?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what they're going to be, but whether it's trenching or scraping,
trenching.
It's part of the sandbar management approach.
Yeah, so they'll start trenching right outside some of the gates, which will allow for that water to free up and go out to sea. So so when the rain hits this weekend, we'll be able to handle just a little bit more rain. So in that sense, that's a very good thing for Oceano, because our risk of flooding is a lot less with the county intervening. So I personally want to thank Supervisor Compton for stepping in and getting that ball rolling. So on that note, since it's not on the agenda.
I say thank you, President Lucy, for your efforts on that. Word has gotten back to me, and I appreciate what you did.
Yeah, well, it was a team effort, trust me. There was quite a few people involved, but it got done. You know, you could feel
Excellent.
The wheels grinding. Okay, on to number 6, special presentations and reports. Mr. Ogren.
I just want to mention real quick, I did not, due to illness, have a chance to talk to the sheriff's office about coming out yet and reporting on their efforts associated with the homelessness situation, but I will follow up.
Okay. We had asked at the previous meeting if the sheriff could come out and give us an update on some of the transient populations in the area. I did read in the newspaper that there has been some activity in helping to get placement, even as far as getting campsites for people. So there is some movement in trying to assist the population, but we would like to hear from our sheriffs on this, and so we'll ask him this week then. Tony.
Bless you.
How are you?
Good evening, Board. Tony Marchino. Doing good.
Good.
So for the past couple weeks, we had our daily round samples. We've had 15 work orders, 8 USAs, 15 customer service calls. We had one after-hours call-out that was due to a line break on Laguna and Strand. It happened on a holiday on Monday. So the water was temporarily off at that location over there on the Strand area. It was maybe off for about an hour. Got it repaired, back in service. Little interruption to the customers. 2 weeks ago, we had meter reads, which took 3 days. We had rereads for highs, lows, leak notifications to customers that had leaks. Still replacing meters, raising boxes. Currently, well 8 generator. So I'm going to be meeting with the electrical engineer that we've had do the single line drawing and everything, meeting with them and the distributor for the generator Thursday to go over a few more concerns that I have regarding replacing the actual infrastructure that is already existing. What I mean by that, I'm not an electrician, is the conduit and the cables that are running from the generator that we currently have to the locations. Do we need to replace that? Is it adequately sized? Is it in good shape? Or is that something we're going to have to think about and budget and get that replaced? So we'll be going over that and give you some more information on the Well 8 generator. APCD permits are submitted. We're approved. So that'll be coming up really soon, getting that thing rolling again.
Great.
Definitely get it done this year.
That's good news.
Yes.
Thanks, Tony.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Here, but Mike's not on, Karen. Oops, still not on.
I just wondered what caused that line break. Was it just old, bad line, old line, or was there some specific challenge in the sands there?
You know, it was a 1-inch service line going to a resident, and once we excavated and found out the break and the location, by looking at it, it almost looked like the main and the actual line were kind of shifted. I don't know if it was due to installation. Whoever installed the service line coming off the main, kind of, it was a Schedule 40. That's something we don't use. It's thinner walled. I don't know if they kind of forced it, the direction. I got
yeah,
pictures of it. It didn't line up right. So maybe it was under enough tension that finally it snapped.
Yeah.
So when we rebuilt it, you know, we put everything in there that it's not under tension or the line's not bound.
Yeah.
Bound up.
And you didn't use Schedule 40.
No, we do not use Schedule 40 at all.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Does anybody else have any questions?
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Karen?
Yeah, I have a fire report. I don't know whether you want it now or in my committee reports.
Your call.
I'll do it in committee reports.
Okay. Very good. And Mr. Ogren.
Madam President, I attended the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting last Thursday. We received updates on several items, including the Habitat Conservation Plan, capital projects efforts, and other ongoing efforts. The proposed budget for 2016-17 was distributed. It will be considered in March. The finance directors will be meeting the week of February 13th to review it. And I'll have it scheduled on your board's agenda for either the second meeting in February or the first meeting in March in advance of the next regular Zone 3 Advisory Committee. Most of the discussion at the meeting, though, related to stormwater management and stormwater resource plans, which is item 8B on the agenda, and so I'll defer additional comments until that agenda item.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And you're chair of Zone 3 now. Is that correct?
For the remainder of the fiscal year. Correct.
So, okay.
But it's on a fiscal year basis, not calendar year.
Okay, so July to June. Okay. Very good. Lori, do you have anything to report on?
We attended the revitalization show that they had here. Very few people came, but the ones that were there were interested in getting some information regarding it. It's pretty much waiting till we get to a point where we have funding and infrastructure ready to go. It's going to be a while. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process, a piece at a time. But it's encouraging. They gave us several different designs that we've gone over before to choose from and see what we felt would work best. Our next meeting is going to be the 4th of February, and we'll see at that point how we're going to roll with it.
What's the time and place for that? Is that here?
It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be here at, I believe, 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock, February 4th.
I can double check, yeah.
Of course, that overlaps the Phillips 66 discussion, but...
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Any other questions for Lori? Lori, let me ask you, did they talk about the new streetlights at this revitalization or
a
not?
A little bit. They touched on it. Linda and I both discussed it with, you know, what kind of style we're going to go with, and like, apparently it's pretty open right now as to, you know, we'd like to have something similar to the original lights that were here. So everything's still kind of like talking about which we feel like would be the best way to go, and possibly closing off a street here or changing it over here, just the options that they've had for the last couple of meetings, and just trying to get more input as to what would be the best way to go with that.
Okay, great. Because I do know that they put a new light in down the street, which I think's nice. I can't quite see it very well.
Is it black? Is that
it's
pole?
Black.
Yeah, there's one down in by us, too, on the beach.
Yeah.
Just popped up one day. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, they're
good-looking
lights,
right,
though. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
It's coming along just kind of slow and taking the time to make sure everybody's in the same path.
And it's pretty much the same plan.
Yes.
Then
yeah.
That
they're just trying to decide
if we're gonna, a couple years ago.
How we're going to change the where the Triangle Park is, whether we close it all the way off or reroute it, change some of the streets a little bit, that type of thing. So there's a few options that we have there that they're working on.
Well, good. Jen.
I attended the advisory council meeting on Monday. And we had a few items of new business. One was the item of a request from the recycling company that is off of 17th Street, I believe. They're requesting alley abandonment, and the council, after much discussion, did vote to recommend no on that alley abandonment.
They're asking for, say it again, alley
abandonment. So they would like to be able to utilize that portion of the alley, not the paved one, but the little one in between their little property and the property behind them. Right now, or at least when I saw it the other day, it's filled with trucks, and it doesn't look like there's an alley there anyway. But on the maps, county maps, there is alley there. There were two other issues as well. There was a home that we approved with no comment. Although there was some issue with the curb gutter and sidewalk, they were requesting a waiver down near Strand, which we asked that they not be granted that waiver. And then a vacation rental that our comments were that they make sure that parking was on the property only and not in the street for safety. So those were the main items. Next meeting in February, we will be getting a presentation from SLOCOG regarding some funding needs and opportunities for transportation with regards to the revitalization issues going on also.
Great.
Just to confirm that I heard you, so the advisory council recommended denial on the abandonment request,
mm-hmm.
and that's the alleyway that we have a water line in?
Is it? Yeah.
And did they disclose that at the council?
It was not brought up, no.
Okay.
It's not the diagonal one behind the melodrama, it's the little one to the upper side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I did realize that our efforts to do the Phillips 66 forum were and did not work out, and so we are not able to hold that forum.
Okay.
So we will see everyone at the commission's hearings.
And can you remind the community again when the Oceania Advisory Committee meets?
Yes. It is on the fourth Monday at 4 o'clock okay. in this room.
So it's always the fourth Monday at 4.
Mm-hmm. I believe February's is on the 22nd.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. Karen.
Yeah. Some very interesting statistics
came the way of the Five Cities Fire Authority at their January meeting. The first was a year-end wrap-up on all of our calls, and it's prepared pretty comprehensively. It showed that we were up 8%. We responded to 3,280 calls, of which 80 were fires. So we continue to have 69.4% of our calls are medical in the two, three communities. 51% of the calls were in Arroyo Grande, 32% in Grover, and 16% in Oceano. That's the way it breaks up by towns. But by fire stations, it's more balanced because the three stations go into each other's area, unlike three fire departments with one fire department in three towns. You can go interspersed, so that Arroyo Grande responded to 36% of the calls, Grover Beach 35, and Oceano 27. So if you look at just the calls to the city, to the individual cities, it's not balanced. But when you look at the three stations responding completely out of the area, we also responded to 125 calls to Pismo Beach, 133 calls, mostly, we call it San Luis Station 21, but that's to the area east of Arroyo Grande. And the Pismo calls include anything, you know, the Orchard Supply Hardware, that shopping center, that is Pismo Beach. Mm-hmm. But Grover's station is the closest fire truck. So we continue to respond to that area because if you have somebody down and you have a heart attack, you know, the first two or three minutes pay off. The other thing was the chief and the staff prepared what they called a hot spots report that shows the 20 most frequent calls within our area for last year.
I'm going to guess it's the senior center.
Roy Grande Care Center.
Yeah.
131 calls.
I see them there a couple times a week, I swear.
Next was Sunrise Terrace, Ramona Gardens Park, Wyndham Residence, Cantina de Arroyo Grande, and finally, number six, with 31 calls, was Arroyo Grande High School. Hmm. It's not calls for medical, it's calls for false alarms. Hmm. The alarms, and they're working, they're going to work with the students to try and reduce that one. Yeah. The high spots for Oceano was the Duna Vista Mobile Home Park, Portico's Mobile Home Park, Rancho Del Arroyo Mobile Home Park, Coastal Dunes RV Park. And of the top 20, number 17 was the Old Oak Park Manor, which is in Pismo Beach. But it's just giving us a guide into how we can maybe reduce these reoccurring medical calls in some of these facilities. And I certainly understand the number of calls that go to where the older people are, because that's much of our service. Oh, and we also had 26 calls to Highway 101, which is technically not, that's a mutual aid call. So anyway, and if you have any questions, it's kind of interesting.
And this is all posted on the website?
Yes, it is. It is, yeah.
So you can go to the Five Cities Fire Authority and it'll be on their website.
Yeah. And we keep monthly totals as well. There's a new monthly total for January 16th. And we're just trying to keep all kinds of statistics so that we have a clear picture of where we're going, where our needs would be, where we expand to, where we contract to. And we are... Our staff is in negotiations with CAL FIRE in regard to mutual aid.
Great.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Director Guerrero. How you doing, Matt?
Doing well, thank you. I attended the Five Cities Fire Authority, the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting last week.
And
I think everybody, if you don't know, we received the Knutson Report. And what the Knutson Report was an investigative report that we hired out an outside expert from out of the county to review the past management practices of basically the Wallace Group from 2004 on. But what ended up happening was investigations being what they are, it expanded because it was sort of the natural course to see this pattern. I will not be able to do the report justice tonight. I think about 80-some pages of it were released. I do encourage everybody to review it. I have asked the sanitation plant staff to put the report up on the website with the exhibits that are attached. I understand there's been a number of public records requests, and so I think that it's important just to make them available to anybody who wants them once legal has reviewed them and determined that they're that they can be released. But there's a number of startling findings that came, and it was the conflict of interest that existed with Mr. Wallace being the plant administrator, approving his own projects and billings, and without the check and balance system that should have been that should have existed. The billings went from around $3,000 a month in the early 2000s, late 90s, up to over $70,000 a month up into 2010. And the plant really wasn't getting a lot for it. Some of the startling numbers were that the Wallace Group was billing up to 663 hours a month for the plant, and that they had up to 28 people on even any given month billing to the plant. Now, I don't know what the staffing levels were for the plant back then, but I'm knowing that they're at about 10 now was the number of positions that we fund for. If you have 10 people working at the plant, that's 400 hours if they're working full-time, not including overtime. And so it appears to have been a very poor management practice. And this is, again, I'm not doing the report justice because there's a lot of stuff in it. A very poor management practice. The conflict of interest. The report agrees with the, or excuse me, it doesn't disagree, shall we say, which to me is an agreement, but it does not disagree with the grand jury findings from 2011. And they also, the report identifies two instances of malfeasance, and the malfeasance was the Wallace Group using the position, or John Wallace, according to the report, I hope I'm summarizing it correctly, using his position as plant administrator to get work for his own company. And so that was a 2008-2009 time period that has been referred to law enforcement authorities. I, of course, don't have anything back yet at this point. What the report did not identify, which I think is important to note, is fraud. It appears that what was done either with the knowledge of the board or approval by the board at some level. The report is very critical of the management and the board practices at that particular time up through 2013 when Mr. Wallace retired. And there is going to be on the agenda next week, and I don't know if it's going to be an opportunity for Wallace to address, because Mr. Wallace had a representative come to the board, and I don't know if it's going to be an opportunity for the Wallace Group to address the report in public comment with some extra time being allowed to the Wallace Group, or if it's going to be an agendized item. I hope that it'll be an agendized item so that the board can weigh in and have some discussion as well. But it's a good read. The report is well written, and I would encourage each of our board members to look at it. I think that it's an important, there's a lot of important lessons of what not to do. And So with that, I hope all of us will be at the next board meeting next Wednesday, 6 o'clock, Roy Grandy City Hall, and we'll hear what explanation, hopefully we'll hear what explanation, whatever we get, we'll hear that from Mr. Wallace. So. Oh, and by the way, the plant numbers are coming down. So Mr. Clemens and I had the opportunity to speak last week about it. And one of the things that we had, we were right at our permit level for the month of December. And one of the things, if I understand it correctly, and John will correct me Mr. Clemens will correct me if I'm not correct on this, that we're still getting to know the plant. There wasn't the plant operations, which were talked about in the Knudsen report, and management were lacking in a lot of ways up till this point. And so as we learn the plant and we learn the changes in environment, changes in condition can affect the running of the plant and the bugs and the biological process. And so as the staff is learning the plant and developing that institutional knowledge, they're becoming better able to respond to the changes and the differing factors. So staff's doing a good job over there. And it's a new day. I mean, things are different than they were. So things are very, very different. So that's my report. Thanks.
Does anybody have any questions?
No.
Well, I have a question, Matt. just so the record's straight. So if this mainly happened, you know, from 2010 to, you know, 2013 or something. So now what happens now that there's a report? There was already a grand jury report before that, and then somebody else had reviewed it before that. So what does it do for the ratepayers? Where, you know,
that's a good question. I didn't answer that. I think I can answer that. So Mr. Knudsen's report made 8 recommendations for plant management and changes, things that can happen. The plant, prior to receiving the report, the current plant operators, Mr. Clemens, Mr. Sweet when he was here, Mr. Karp when he was here, and I guess the board, all worked together and had already implemented 6 of those particular changes. And so the couple that are left, one is to get billing agreements with the individual districts, and I forgot the 8th one, the one that we haven't done. Oh, good. I'm sure Ms. Tacker will tell us, but she's playing it close to the vest. No, but there were 8 recommendations. Only 2 haven't already been done. So, what is left? I mean, so what does the ratepayer get now, prospectively moving forward? I think what you have is maybe some awareness. You know, there's this other thing that goes on. I mean, we did wait a couple of years to do it. At the time, my disinclination to doing it was that I didn't have an instance of fraud. And, you know, the underlying current was that this really was a fraud investigation, and that was what, you know, people weren't saying. We still don't. We still don't have that instance of fraud. What we have is mismanagement. What we have is misdealing. What we have is conflict of interest. But we don't have an actionable report. There's not a closed session agenda item for the board to go in and look at filing a lawsuit, for example. So I think there's value to the report. We spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on it. And I think there's some value to the report because it also educates the public of what do they expect from their board, what do they expect from their staff. And so I think that's where the value is in it for us prospectively moving forward.
Yeah, and hopefully it speaks to moving forward.
And that's the point. Let's move forward. You know, let's move on with our projects. The staff, there really is. If you look at, we received the audit during this meeting also. I didn't really cover it. It was a good audit. The audit shows million. Is it 1.5 million, John? 2 million? I can't remember the difference in the 2 years. We lost 1.3 million the last year that.
We lost 1 million.
Yeah, we lost 1.3 million the last year before we changed administration, and then now we're up 2 million, right? Or is it 1.5 million? I may have the numbers messed.
Hold on one second. I. I just wanted it to just to be a question. So
yes.
So it wasn't right. Supposed to be a long dialogue.
Okay, yeah, I'll be sure. We lost $1,000,003. They spent $4.3 million. Our general revenue was $3 million. So they lost $1,000,003 because we had spent $4.3 million. Even worse, our budget for the following year was $6 million, and we only have a $3 million revenue. So we lost $1,000,003. And then the year following that, it was a dramatic change. We ended up in the positive around $600,000.
Six or seven hundred thousand.
And then this next year, the second full year after, we're actually at $1 million in the positive in cash increase. So you went from losing $1.3 million to actually gaining $700,000 to the following year gaining $1 million on the same amount of revenue. That's
okay.
What happened.
So. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Mr. Ogren, is there anything you'd like to report on under this area before I take public comment?
Madam President, I already provided my committee report.
Yeah, I just thought I'd ask again.
Oh, no, nothing else.
Okay, so is there any public comment on special presentations and reports? Ms. Tacker?
Before I start, did you have a report, Ms. Lucy? Because you skipped over yourself.
Yes, I did. I did not have any report. I'm sorry.
Okay. I would like to respond to a couple of things that were said just now in these reports. First, with regard to the Knutson report, Knutson doesn't call it out loudly, but I would like to underscore and thank Director Angelo, Director Guerrero, and then Director Jim Hill, as each of them served on the sanitation district and repeatedly voted no against the Wallace expenditures. And I think they did a fine job representing Oceano at the sanitation district during those years. And those were, I went to those meetings. You were alone. And I've been on a board. I've been that gadfly. And it's a lonely place. I'm sure you felt bullied, and I'm glad you stuck to your guns and stuck up for your community. As far as Wallace coming back to the district to give some kind of presentation, I just tell it to the judge. I don't think he's given his spin many, many times. Many, many times. He's had road shows going to your board, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach. He's had plenty of chances. The documents speak for themselves. And while you don't see, or Knutson may not have found fraud, and it's documented in his report, he didn't look at every sheet of paper. He didn't look at the revenue stream. I believe that grant monies and perhaps loan funds that were funded by other sources, there still is yet to be determined whether fraud could be found. So the jury's out. And real quick, with regard to Mr. Clemens' invitation to each of you to tour the plant, I don't live here. I've toured your plant 3 times. I first toured it in 2003 when I was looking for a sewer for my community. I wanted a different kind of technology than what was being proposed at the time, and I liked the trickling filter and got to tour your plant at that time. I've since been back twice in 14 and 15, and Mr. Clemens has given the tour, and I think it behooves you to understand what happens with sewage and how it all works over there, and you won't get the whole thing all at once, but he does a fine job giving you a tour and an education. And as long as you're going to be enduring rate increases, which you are in the near term, I think each one of you can explain to your customers what's facing them with those rate increases.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. Okay. Is there any other public comment on these items?
Can I add one comment? I'm sorry, and Ms. Tacker made me think of it. One of the things that she didn't say this exactly, but I thought of it while she was talking. One of the things that the Knutson report talked about was the revolving board, and there had been 15 board members in a short period of time. And one of the things that we did as this board a few years back, as we started maintaining our assignments so that we got interinstitutional knowledge and operational history and relationships with staff and the other board members, so that it created more of a continuity. And I think that that's been a positive change.
I agree. All right. On to items that are under consent items. We have several. We have several will serve letters. We have spend a little bit of money. Ben, did you have a chance to look through the warrants?
Yeah, I have.
Madam President, normally we do public comment on the consent agenda right up front.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Ms. Tacker just said she passed it.
We have a couple, at least one of the applicants for the will serve letters. I'm not sure if they desire to speak or
okay.
not.
Okay. Is there somebody who has a will serve that would like to comment on it? Step up to the podium.
Personally, I'm good as long as it's approved.
You'll know in a minute. You'll know in a minute.
Thanks for understanding what consent items are. Okay. I'm really happy to see that the building is starting to pick back up and that the will serve letters are starting to come back in, which means that the economy is starting to maybe bounce. I like to keep hope alive, you know, but I do think it's coming back, so it's nice to see packets with will serves in them.
Madam President, I think that Director Blackburn pointed out to me that that for one of our charges included in the authorizations is the July payment to the county on Lopez.
Yes.
Your board is obviously still free to authorize that, but when we get to, we don't want to send the check yet. So
that's a big check to send.
Yeah, that check is due, I think, July 1st. And yeah. So.
And it was Director Angelo that pointed it out. Just
oh, Director Angelo gets the credit.
Yeah.
Director Blackburn mentioned it to me.
I'm getting
that
wrong here.
I'd say that's good teamwork. Teamwork, yeah.
Get a second opinion over here.
Okay. I might add that both the Community Health Center and the Montoya's house have been looked at by the advisory committee, and both were recommended. Just as a side note, they're for you from that end.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll entertain a motion to accept the consent items.
I'll make that.
Okay.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
I'm the one on 325 York. I may be in radius of not.
So, Director Angelo, with that disclosure, and you don't have to leave on the consent agenda, it's just will be noted in the record that you're abstaining from that particular item.
Okay. So, I'll accept the motion to accept the consent agenda.
I think Director Guerrero made the motion, and
Vice President White seconded.
And Vice President White seconded.
Okay. So, do we need will call? I mean, will call.
No.
That's where I want to be. I really, really rather be at a will call window. But, so, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Abstained. And you're going to, do you withhold on this one?
325 York, yes.
Okay, now I'll entertain a motion.
It's okay.
It's done.
It's noted on the record
that she abstained.
Okay.
Great.
So,
congratulations,
right along.
Montoya.
Get it built now.
And there's more lots, too. You feel free to, yeah.
Okay, on this one, I'm going to pass the floor over to Mr. Ogren, who's going to gracefully dance us through 8BB.
8AAB and 8C, and I think that on all of them, even though I don't have very lengthy staff discussions on any of them, there may be a little bit of a perspective I provide that was not in the written staff report, and therefore I'd recommend public comment on each of those items. And in moving forward then, on item number 8A, which is review of a pro forma prepared for operational staff, Tony and I and the crew, we sat down, especially after having worked through the year, And I'm not going to go into the details of the spreadsheet. You know, we broke down operational tasks and responsibilities by daily, weekly, monthly, bimonthly, quarterly, semiannual, and annual, and then did a calculation of estimated hours. And what this essentially shows is that the 3 full-time equivalent staffing that we have is appropriate for, you know, the very basic responsibilities. Current year accomplishments, I'll note, included a lot of work on well number 5. In fact, Tony and the guys were out there breaking up the concrete and starting the prep for the permanent abandonment. In order to permanently abandon, we have to have a licensed contractor to do that, but they're taking out the pad and a lot of the concrete work in order to set it up for the contractor. But in any case, Tony and Jason and Casey did a lot of extra work this year, and that was only able to be accomplished because of things not done. Because of the drought, we're not doing line flushing. We did not do valve turning and hydrant maintenance this year, and so we do need to get those back into the routine. But the idea that I think this is a pretty good estimate in terms of what their ongoing responsibilities are. Pro forma on infrastructure will be part of the efforts that we do this year as we move forward in the capital improvement planning, partly with significantly funding from the Integrated Regional Water Management Program. One of the examples of that will be then, you know, what's the capital replacements associated with sewer laterals, and then that will come back to your board for some decisions on how to move forward on sewer laterals in the future. My final real note is that the Tyler system, which is our accounting system, is not currently able to track these different activities, because ideally what we would do is we would take the activities that we've identified on the pro forma, and then on the weekly time cards they get input, and we would be able to then line up how many hours were actually worked for those activities versus what we estimated. And it's just simply that not all the modules of Tyler have been implemented. I believe that we would be able to track these through the project management module, which when I've looked back, it does appear that the district did purchase, but we just haven't implemented it yet. So certainly that's going to be a goal this year with the business and accounting manager position, is to implement that module so that we can then have a better tracking of time and effort associated with different tasks or different projects. And by being able to input the hours on a weekly basis or biweekly basis, you know, when payroll comes out, get them into the Tyler system so we can track actual hours versus the estimate.
So is that, excuse me.
And that concludes my comments. I'd be glad to answer questions.
I just want to know, I'm trying to think of examples in my head. Would it be similar to a time study that you would be able to keep a time study?
So this, you know, pro forma is a time study. It's the estimate
right.
of hours. And the system currently, our Tyler system, currently we don't have the ability to put that detailed hours on a weekly basis into there.
Right.
All we really put into the payroll function is by water fund or sewer fund, and whether it's straight time or overtime, just the real basic coding. In order to get into a more higher level detail coding, then we're going to have to do more work in order to implement those features of Tyler so we can do that. They've never been implemented so far, so that's certainly going to be one of our goals in 2016.
So, yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that it was a more detailed, closer eye.
Yeah.
Studies are kind of spontaneous
exercises
where this is a consistent. It helps you to track your dollars.
It's
much closer.
Yeah, it's especially in time, hours worked, and level of effort. It's especially important in some activities as opposed to others, because certain activities take 2 hours a day if they're doing their rounds, you know, and it's just simply 2 hours a day every day.
Yeah.
Those type of activities can be estimated extremely precisely. But when we move over into what kind of level of effort is on line breaks, that can be quite a range. We could have good years where we have relatively few line breaks, and then we have bad years where we might have more line breaks. So tracking that time, you know, it's good on the basic stuff, but it's especially important on those types of tasks and activities where we can have, you know, a range of what we might expect. And by getting into that level of detail, it gives us a better ability to evaluate whether or not three full-time equivalents is good on a long-term basis, whether or not part-time help might be good, whether or not a contractor on call for line breaks might be a good idea. But in any case, the first step is to do the pro forma and develop the estimates of hours, and then the next step is to, you know, start tracking them so we can see how good those estimates are and planning on long-term maintenance efforts.
Okay. Thanks. I just had a question. Looking through, I saw the lateral cleaning, and I was wondering if staff was working through cleaning all the laterals in the system or if it was just certain ones.
Just certain ones.
Okay.
Yeah, the kind of the hotspot ones, yeah, and the ones that we believe are at risk for sanitary sewer overflows.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you want us to ask you questions, or?
It's your, at your pleasure.
Okay, Matt, do you have any questions?
No, and not any that weren't already answered, obviously. There's this the asset a pro forma that is still being worked on, but I'm just encouraged. I think I first asked for this 3 years ago. It's a while ago. And was it 4 years ago? It was a long time ago. It was 4 years ago. That's right. And I thought it would take 6 months. And so, but I appreciate it. And the I know that we're going the right direction. This is a very valuable planning tool for budgeting and for institutional knowledge, and really helps us. It will help us in a long way. The problem, of course, is the front end labor required to create these documents is intense. And so, but thank you. That's my other question.
So do you want me to go down the line, or do you want to just jump in? Does anybody have anything that jumps out at them?
I think it's a good idea, so we can,
Karen,
see where everything's broke out at.
Well, the only, in looking over it for about the 10th time with a magnifying glass, where I see this thing, it says water, lead, and copper every third year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think immediately of Flint, Michigan.
You know, in following Flint, Michigan, because it's one of the things that we have to do when we're working in the industry, a lot of people think that east of the Mississippi, they're really not following the protocol. So the lead and copper rules. And we have to do the testing once every 3 years.
Okay.
And the purpose of the lead and copper testing is to determine whether or not lead and copper is eroding and coming out of the welding, especially on some of the old pipes, like the old copper pipes. It's the type of solder that was used. It's not the only way that lead and copper can get into the water supply, but it's a common way, especially for plumbing that was done in a certain period of time, and I can't remember what that period of time, but maybe the 70s. The point is that when you do lead and copper testing, you do not flush the lines before you take the sample. You're supposed to take that sample when you first turn on the tap in the morning when the water hasn't been used, because that's when you're really going to be able to identify what the amount of lead and copper is. And from reading on Flint, what I'm hearing is that there's a lot of agencies that are out there that are actually advising their customers to let the water run for 2 or 3 minutes before taking the sample. And that's completely inappropriate. And there's some speculation that the lead and copper problems on the eastern part of the states may actually be worse than we know because of this incorrect advice that agencies have been giving to their customers. So anybody who's testing for lead and copper in their home, you can get test kits, or if you're part of the system, make sure to really follow the recommended guidelines and you don't flush for 2 or 3 minutes. If you're concerned that your house might have any heavy metals in them, then before you drink water in the morning, one of the advices is take your shower first, try to get it flushed, but don't turn on that tap, especially with children, and don't feed them the water, you know, that you get out of the tap first thing. We haven't had any signs of corrosivity in our system. But in any case, anybody who is concerned about that, make sure to flush before you drink, but don't flush it when you're doing your testing. In Flint, what happened is they also changed water supply. So depending on the hardness factor in your water, it can contribute to deterioration of the pipes themselves. And then that pipe material is coming through, especially on the old ones that are have some heavy metals in them. So it's the reason why municipalities go through this testing protocol is because the corrosivity of our water could lead to lead and copper showing up in households, even if the problem originates within the plumbing of the house itself. And that, again, the regulatory requirement is we have to go through the protocol one every 3 years. So let's try to capture that responsibility as well, even though it's not an annual one.
And you said we do it every 3 years?
Correct.
Okay, because I know that there's an in Ohio, that there's another town that's come up, that's cropped up, that's, I don't know the severity, if it's Flint, as bad as Flint is, but there, yeah, there is another town in Ohio.
And so I believe 2016 is a year. Yeah. Okay. Tony confirmed.
And like you said, people can go to the local hardware store and get tests.
I'm not sure if they can get it at the local hardware store. I know that I've been able to pick one up locally, but you might have to look online in order to get a test kit.
Okay. Great.
This is not an action item. It's just
no, it's
a review
not.
And discussion item.
I had one question. Actually, I did go over it pretty thorough. Can we talk a little bit about the garbage fund?
With respect to the garbage, well, garbage fund in terms of hours expended or budget?
No, as it relates to the Performa.
Okay.
And maybe it would be better to talk about it when we set the goals or when we do the annual budget, because I know that we do have some funds in the garbage fund, and I'd like to see us maybe flush it out. I know the alleys, if we could somehow get some projects, you know,
and
considered
I was,
for the future, you know. Yeah. I'm not saying hit the ground running. I'm saying let's look at these funds and let's...
So on our item 8C, the budget item, I do have a couple of comments on the garbage fund, and
uh-huh,
I think that would be the appropriate time to
okay,
follow up on that discussion.
All right, so that was one. And there was... And the MOU that was done in, I think it was updated 07?
07.
Yeah. When did we... Do you know when we up that date that again? This one right here, Watershed and Creek, MOU.
Oh, well, that is our
another
next
item.
Agenda. Oh, yes, that's our next agenda item.
Okay. All right. And, okay, so that was all under the Performa then. That's all I had. Do
and
we
so
want to do...
even though it's not an action item, it'd still be appropriate to take public comment?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Instead of doing them all together, we'll do them separately. Ms. Tacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And when you talked about the sampling, it raised a question in my mind, and maybe Pablo can give us an update on the sample that arrived with the failed ice pack. Maybe it has that been redone. And you can talk about it whenever. One thing I did like to see in the discussion and the results of this pro forma, the staff time for your utility department, is that, well, I should just read it. Illustrates, the pro forma illustrates that the district's 3 full-time operation staff is appropriately sized for the normal activities and responsibilities. In lots of places, they're trying to hire more people, have more staff, and even here, some years ago, that was a push, and doesn't sound to me like Pablo's asking for that. He did mention the capital improvement pro forma, and of course, I think we're all eagerly waiting that. But you said it was going to be funded by what I believe to be the grant funds, and I'd like to understand that better in that what I remember was that was for the leak detection plan, and I guess I thought leak detection was in the water supply, but I guess you could do leak detection in the sewer supply, or it's not a supply, although it keeps coming.
There's a steady
sewer
supply
system,
of it.
But and then you know the other grant funds were supposed to go to the LID or injection. So I really just would like to know how the money from the grants would fund your capital pro forma, because that's something you wanted to do anyway, and without that grant money, would it not get done?
Right.
So that's really the gist of my question.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else?
Madam President, on both of those questions, so on the capital improvement program, the IRWM grant has $150,000, and I'm going to cover it a little bit more in the budget discussions, associated with the CIP capital improvement program for leaky pipes. So that is going to be the biggest work effort associated with the CIP program, is identifying the pipes that need to be replaced, what the cost estimates are, and helping to develop an implementation schedule for replacing those pipes. Granted, that's not all of the CIP work done. So what we need to first do is get into the details, make sure we scope that project in detail. We got to go out on an RFP in order to find the approach. And then, secondly, look at what does that not cover. So there will still be some water system improvements. Like, for example, it's not going to address water tanks or the wells or anything. So we'll have some other work to do. On the wastewater side of it, it's correct that the grant is not going to provide any for any of the CIP planning for wastewater. We do have some money in the budget this year, although some of it's already been allocated for the manhole raises. So when I come back, I am going to have to identify what's not being covered by the IRWM grant and what do we need to do about it. That's a good segue into the staffing level issue. Because, for example, we're not doing any replacements or long-term maintenance associated with laterals. And so we either need to incorporate that into a long-term maintenance portion of the pro forma, or your board would have a policy decision alternatively to have property owners responsible for those laterals. But if the decision is that we're going to maintain them on the long term, then that additional component of the pro forma may lead to then other long-term maintenance efforts that might require an additional staffing. So right now, you know, I intended to in here say that basic operations and maintenance requirements, the three full-time equivalents seems appropriate. Once we get through the asset side of the pro forma and the longer-term maintenance efforts, we'll be able to identify to what extent do the utility crews need to be working on that. And is it something that would warrant having an additional staff member? Maybe not. Maybe it's contractors who do that work. There's different approaches. But, again, this is one component of that puzzle, and then we'll be evaluating the other components as the year progresses.
Okay, great. Thank you. I hope that answered some questions. Okay. So this is a work in progress, and we're just going
to
keep updating it.
Yep, no action item. So unless there's any other questions, we can move to agenda item 8B. Agenda item 8B is consideration of recommendations on stormwater resource planning, including approval of the Rio Grande Creek Memorandum of Understanding to promote cooperative watershed management, an endorsement on using flood control zone 3 property tax roll reserves as a local match on a Proposition 1 grant, that grant being for the development of a watershed stormwater resource plan for Arroyo Grande Creek and Metal Creek. I have a few comments on this one. One is that, you know, right now we are really witnessing changes and new developments in stormwater management overall. There's a paradigm shift, for the lack of a better word, to see stormwater as a resource and not as a nuisance that just needs to get out to the ocean as fast as possible. A resource is to help with groundwater recharge, ecosystem restoration. And that is especially applicable in this county for the Aurora Grande levee system. We know that at some point in time after the alternative 3A of the water management plan, that's still in the federal permitting processes for the county, after that's implemented, the levee system is still not going to be able to handle a 100-year storm. And so, you know, the county identifies the areas where it's most likely to overflow the levees, and everybody pretty much knows that that needs to be directed to the farmland as a way of protecting the urban area. And that's just simply a well-understood fact associated with the levee system. How is it then that those storm flows might be managed? Because in a current environment, when it spills, the water is going to go where it wants to go. And can a program or projects be developed in order to enhance groundwater recharge and to make sure to control the storm flows when they do come? And that's really something that is going to be subsequent to this alternative 3A. What's going to happen with the flap gates? Should those be changed out for a different type of a mechanism in order to, instead of using flap gates, use something else, which could potentially improve water quality? So part of the stormwater resource plan is to start addressing some of those longer-term issues. Proposition 1 has $200 million in it for flood control and drainage-related projects, and new legislation mandates that there be a stormwater resource plan or a functional equivalent for any new grants. So in order to access that $200 million, an SRP has to be developed. Meetings with the regional board also integrate a higher degree of expectations on contaminant loading in terms of the municipal storm systems, drainage systems that go out to surface water bodies. And there's, you know, a couple in our watershed. But they have higher expectations on making sure to address what the water quality is and how that water quality, the discharges out of the municipal storm systems, how it's affecting the water quality of surface waters. That's a little bit of a background. So what? Oceano CSD does not have flood control or drainage powers approved by LAFCO. You know, all of these responsibilities are the responsibilities of other agencies. But even so, Oceano is the community that's at the greatest risk. And in my recent discussions with other agencies, and even at the Zone 3 Advisory Committee last Thursday, I reemphasized the idea that even though Oceano CSD doesn't have that flood control or drainage power, Oceano is the community that's at risk and can get hit. Bottom line is Oceano's power is solely power of persuasion, and even President Lucy, your announcement during public comment about your work with individuals in the community and Supervisor Lynn Compton to make sure that the emergency permits were pursued was underneath the power of persuasion. The recommended actions are really twofold. One is the adoption of the Aurora Grande Creek MOU, and that is simply a statement. It has no binding responsibilities, but it's a big statement of the agencies that are willing to collaborate to try to address drainage, flood control, and stormwater issues. Adopting the MOU is important because when grants are pursued, no matter who pursues the grants, the more agencies that can be shown to be working on collaborative efforts, the more points that a region gets in a grant application. But even besides pursuing money, you know, the overtures of collaboration and the willingness to work with each other are extremely important. A number of agencies have already adopted their Grande Creek MOU. Others haven't, but at this time, a recommendation is that your board also do so. I want to back up a second, too, because even though Oceano doesn't have the drainage or the flood control responsibilities, we do have water resource responsibilities, and now that stormwater is moving to being seen as a resource, well, that is a resource for groundwater recharge, and it is a resource that your board does have a responsibility associated with. Second is the utilization of Zone 3 reserves. And the reason why I'm recommending that your board endorse the idea of the use of Zone 3 reserves is because currently in Zone 3, there's over $2.5 million of reserves that were established prior to the year 2000, and they were established as part of property tax collections that the County Flood Control District had collected, had been allocated to them. That $2.5 million plus has been used a little bit on miscellaneous projects over the course of the last 15-plus years, but it's substantially just stayed intact and hasn't been spent, and it's grown a little bit. And the idea is that Zone 3 currently is a water supply zone for Lopez, and the contracts that the County Flood Control District has with Oceano and Grover and Arroyo Grande and Pismo and CSA 12 pay for 100% of the cost of the Lopez water supply. So the question is, what should happen with those Zone 3 reserves? And the discussion at Zone 3 at the last meeting was, is it appropriate to recommend that they're used for a broader public purpose? Because the water supply is essentially paid for by those who get the water supply. Drainage is very hard to fund. There's no service charges on drainage. There's no, not like water or sewer. So the discussion, and Zone 3 didn't take final action because everybody sort of wanted to take it back to their boards and we need to talk with the Technical Advisory Committee. But the discussion that I anticipate, and Zone 3 may have a special meeting on this as well, is should some of those Zone 3 reserves be used as the funding match for a Proposition 1 grant so a stormwater resource plan can get developed? Basically, the state's requirement is they'll, for the overall effort, they'll pay for 50% of it, and the local agencies have to pay for 50% of it. It has multiple benefits. For the cities, it has benefits because the preparation of the plan will make them eligible to pursue grants. The preparation of the plan will also help address some of the regulatory requirements that exist now and are coming up in the future. And the part of the plan that I really like is the effort overall to identify what are the other things that need to be done in the watershed in order to better manage the watershed. Again, the biggest issue is the levee system and Metal Creek and the lagoons. The lagoons are the ones that are at risk of flooding more often. The levees are the ones that when it breaks loose has the more extensive flooding. And so this is the opportunity for Oceano CSD to participate in a process, to weigh in, to provide input, and to use, you know, whatever powers of persuasion we can use in order to try to shape the future of stormwater management in, you know, as the, in the years that come. I can't say with complete confidence that we're going to be able to get everybody together to get this grant application submitted by March 4th, but that's the current effort. There's a Zone 3 TAC meeting next week. I met with the county and the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District again today for a couple hours, and we're moving forward with approaches to pursue those grant monies. But really, my thoughts are, for me to do anything more than just the basic feedback that I've gotten and the basic reading of the grant guidelines and everything, I need to know whether or not your board endorses this support. And the way to see if that's true is to put those recommendations on your agenda for consideration. So again, the recommendations are twofold. One is to approve the Arroyo Grande Creek MOU, Watershed Memorandum of Understanding, which promotes interagency collaboration. And the second is the endorsement of utilizing some of those Zone 3 reserves as the match for a grant in the event that the grant was approved and funded.
So when is the grant due, in March?
The due date for the grant is March 4th, correct. That's about five and a half weeks away.
It's two meetings away, that's, and you're not going to be here for one of them, so.
And the other side of it is that it's likely that Zone 3 would have to have a special meeting. County Public Works staff has to have their stuff prepared almost 3 weeks in advance of going to the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
So timing is really tight.
So can we agree to put it on the next agenda for this board?
It's here tonight. You don't.
Oh,
yeah.
So, and if we can act tonight, then that's great. That's
fine. Yeah, because the thing is, again, with respect to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, I'm your representative on that committee. So if your board endorses the use of those Zone 3 reserves, I have the ability to go back to the committee and say, you know, the Oceano Board of Directors endorses that. The other thing that we would anticipate seeing in the future then is that any flood control stormwater related work that might be funded out of those Zone 3 reserves would be incorporated into the Zone 3 budget. There's nothing, they Zone 3 endorsed a $30,000 project for the flood control district at the last meeting for Carpenter Creek, and the county's working with state parks on that one. A relatively small dollar amount. The timing and the sequencing was not as good as it should have been, but as a relatively smaller dollar item, the advisory committee still endorsed it. If it had been $300,000 rather than $30,000, I don't think that the endorsement would have come forward. But the point being is that we endorsed it, and part of my pitch was to, you know, support the county on that current effort, but also to establish the expectation that we be able to pursue better watershed management, and that if anything in the future is being proposed out of those reserves, that it's incorporated into the budget. So this is really, you know, a broad type of a policy decision. And in the future, if the county is proposing stuff in the budget, then you'll see it as part of your review of the proposed budget, just as we're going to be bringing back that proposed budget in a couple meetings from now.
Okay. I'm fine with it. I apologize. I took no action under 8A and just carried it to A, B, and C. So I apologize for not, you know, I knew that, but I just thought I would use it for the whole system. But anyway, so does anybody have any questions about this?
Well, I was at the MOU meeting, and I certainly, having listened to it all, the review at that meeting, I certainly am in support of it. I think it's a good opportunity to get started, to get somewhere. I mean, if you don't start with the planning, you're never gonna be able to get past that.
And there's already been a lot of work done in the watershed, so there's a lot of work to build on top of. There's drainage and related flood control related projects that are included in the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan itself. So we can, part of the effort would be identify those, how do we rank them, and then working with local agencies, the public, regulatory agencies, what are the other types of project concepts that haven't been identified yet, and bring those onto the table. Which of those might be more feasible in the short term versus which of those might be longer term, but to take the existing efforts and to build onto them.
Okay. I'm comfortable with it. I've read every bit of literature you can find in it. So, Matt?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with it. I'd move to approve.
Okay, so roll call. I mean, I've got it.
Matt?
I'm just asking, do we need a roll call on this? Okay. So at this point, I'll take public comment. Is there anybody who would like to do public comment on this topic? This would be matching funds and supporting Zone 3 for using these reserves. Okay.
I'll move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you. Well, I'll report back during my general manager reports on how that effort pans out.
Okay. Can I? Now you're going to do C, right?
Correct.
And we're just going to whip right through that, right? And then if nobody minds, we need to take a quick break.
Okay. That's the pressure for me to whip right through. That concludes my... No.
Yep, there, that's good.
Madam President, members of the board.
What's wrong with our gold carpet, man? Okay, so it's not Shag.
Item 8C, review of December 31, 2015 budget status and other related recommendations. In the staff report, I made, you know, all funds are at or near budget. We're tracking pretty close. That's the good news. On the administrative revenues, the SAND district billing, as we all know, will be short, and that helps to offset our administrative costs. We have other revenues in the general fund that will more than likely offset that. But with all of the administrative costs being allocated out, if we hit those exactly on budget without the SAND district revenues, then we would see up to about a 2.5% increase in the actual administrative cost allocated out to the other budgets. So that is one of the variables. Water, although on water sales, we are just under the estimated for 6 months. It was about negative 2.5%. The shortfall could increase by year end because of how the water budget, how the water cycles work. And, you know, we've done three billing periods this year, but they're a little bit more heavily weighted to the summer months. So we, depending on what consumption happens in the next, you know, for the first 6 months of this year, we might actually see a little bit more of a shortfall on water sales. You'll note that we're getting a lot of connection fees in, and we had two more will serve letters come through today. So overall water sales revenues are good. But still, we need to keep a close watch on the actual water sales to customers. You know, it's really two sides of the coin, right? The community has done a great job at water conservation, well exceeding our target of 20% when they were adopted and the governor's target of 25%. As a reminder, we are in the middle of the Prop 218 using the 20% target that had been previously established when on April 1st the governor bumped it up to 25%. But we're in the Prop 218, so the rates were based on a 20% conservation, and the community has been around 27, 28%. So great job on that side of the coin. But, of course, on the other side of the coin, it means that we've got a little bit of a revenue shortfall. Will that revenue shortfall really be serious enough to require board action? Hopefully not. In the Prop 218, we have the CPI adjustment that's going to happen in the near future, and then also the two pass-throughs for State Water and Lopez Water. So we're just going to have to monitor it closely and see how we're going to do. But I don't have a significant concern because of the fact that we were able to balance the budget this year, and anything that varies from it should still stay relatively close. Salaries will take a tick up in the second half because first half of the year we weren't fully employed, but those numbers are already showing well under budget, so I'd expect those to get back up closer to budget. Then other upcoming items on the emergency generator. Tony gave a report that the line drawings by the electrical are done, and we have to now move to what is the last remaining things that need to be done, so we have to can go out to bid. I think he mentioned it was well 8 emergency generator, but as a point of clarification, it's not going to automatically turn on well number 8 because that was the alternative that we had been previously looking at. That project cost was probably going to be in the $150,000 to $200,000 range based on the size of a generator necessary to power up a well. Instead, this approach is the emergency generator that will turn on the fire station immediately. It will provide a connection for a portable generator, and we'll bring that back to your board. From a budgetary standpoint, since that's what we're focusing on right now, I did get confirmation, or I found the correspondence from the county that the public facilities fees are appropriate for the generator project. And so when I bring it back, we'll have whatever our total estimated project costs at that time are. I'll make sure to identify the facilities fees as funding it, since it's essentially for the fire department right now. Maybe a couple bucks needs to come out of the water fund, since we're going to have that connection for a temporary generator. What that will do then, in turn, if you know, we started the year with $180,000 or so in the public facilities fee, The emergency generator project should run in the $50,000 to $100,000 range. And that means that after it's all said and done and near the end of the year, I would expect we're going to have public facilities fees in the bank of something like $100,000 to $125,000. That number itself would come really close to funding another fire engine. And so what we can do in the next 6 months is talk about those dedication of public facilities fees and whether your board wants to dedicate it for that purpose. And I've been talking with Chief Lieberman a little bit because it might be that we simply designate that for Five Cities Fire Authority use for fire engines. They also recently took action on purchasing of the replacement engine, and that's really going to be incorporated into next year's budget, not this year's budget. And with the growth in property tax revenues that we saw last year and what we're seeing this year, I think that it's still going to be a close call at the budget time, but my general back of the envelope estimates are that we're good with funding that the first fire engine replacement, and then if there's a dedication of the public facilities fees, that will probably be in good shape to help fund the second fire engine as well. Turning to the question that President Lucy had regarding illegal dumping, yes, there is significant funds with both budgeted that we haven't tapped into yet, as well as reserves to start moving forward on that. Staffing limitations is where we're really limited. So I've started doing some outreach to individuals who I know are in the industry and may be able to assist us in moving that program forward. In addition, we have, as a future agenda item, is South County Sanitation District, their franchise extension. And I've started talking to them about the illegal dumping issue and some things that we really need to address in Oceano. So right now, in looking at the garbage budget, we haven't spent much on it, so we're well under budget. But I'm looking to external resources to help us move forward with that. With regard to the IRWM efforts itself, the funding was 75% of the grant request. That grant request was included, about 30% of it was for grant administration, and we structured it in a way in order to get consultants to help with even that administrative process of the grant and doing the RFPs to get the consultants and everything. So that administrative component is going to have to be handled in-house since we didn't get fully funded, and I'm okay with that. Much of that's going to fall on me, but some of our account administrators, Nicole, will be helping with it as well. But with respect to the three components, $150,000 for the CIP, working on the leaky pipes, $40,000 for LID, low-impact development, and promoting groundwater recharge within the community, and $25,000 associated with funding to injection wells associated with the reclaimed water project. Those add up to just over $215,000. And the net grant amount we're going to get is about $198,000. So I'll have to come back in order to address that other $17,000 or so. The good news is the fund your board had approved, authorized an agreement for the grant preparation up to $25,000, and we won't have to pay for any of that. So that's the good news. That's getting covered through the component of the grant that goes to the county for their responsibilities in the overall management of the grant. And as a quick reminder, we teamed with Templeton Community Services District and San Simeon Community Services District in those grant efforts. And then my final comment in terms of upcoming budgetary issues we're going to have to address is the Airport Drive Bridge utility relocations. That'll be in the near future. We'll have to award some work in order to do the design-related services. The good news on that project is that we won't have to temporarily relocate the water lines. We can just simply cut them off at both ends of the bridge. Tony and the crews are able to do that. That way the customers can continue to get water. It's just not going to be looped. It's not going to go over the bridge. The sewer is going to have a temporary relocation because that's a force main. But because it's a force main, it's a lot easier to do than if it was a gravity flow sewer system. And so it's a couple of highlights on what to anticipate when it comes back to your board. But again, we're going to have to address the Airport Drive Bridge project and what our responsibilities are for utility relocation in the next couple months.
Okay.
And that pretty much concludes my staff report. With respect to actually on the carpeting and the on the office furniture, we've gotten a number of proposals in so far. They're all underneath $10,000 for each of them, and that's why I have the recommendation. If your board wants to see them come back to you for final approval, you certainly can. I think it's easy to observe that the carpeting really needs to get replaced. It's not just worn. If you look around, you can see where it's almost you can see the concrete underneath.
Hey, it's only 30 years old. Come on.
Yeah, I know. There's some things that are like 53 years old and still working kind of sort of okay, but
most of that stuff's buried. It's underground. We're transporting water in it.
Or if it was 100% wool, it probably would have still lasted.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
And then the approach on the office furniture is simply to set up some cubicles for the staff. Right now, the way they work, it's in an open environment. It's not efficient in terms of their management of their documents at all. It's not efficient in terms of, you know, the privacy factor and being able to put your head down and get some work done. So we've gone out there and solicited a couple of different proposals on that as well.
Well, good.
Could I ask one stupid question?
You can ask a question.
Why are you doing carpet instead of hard surface?
Well, one is just a replacement. You know, a noise. I would recommend carpeting, especially in a board office. When you have harder surfaces, the noises echo a lot more.
It's already echoes.
Yeah, so we'll see a lot more echo factor.
Okay, so do you need a board action on this?
Yeah, we do. So we have, there's a number of recommendations there. And again, if it meets the pleasure of a board recommendation to approve staff recommendations, or a motion to approve staff recommendations would be appropriate after public comment.
Correct. Okay, I'll take public comment right now if there's no board questions to staff. Julie, Ms. Tucker.
I think Jennifer had questions, but she'll go after me. But then I won't know what she... So, that's backwards. I am curious, because I haven't seen this in this district, and I don't know where the stuff goes. But oftentimes, districts have surplus items that they sell. A few years ago, you guys had floral chairs. Where'd they go? They had a value. And even if they go in the trash, there's documentation and a depreciation and loss. So the chairs, the television, the VCR, all those things. And sometimes there's the value can actually bring in a little cash. So it's time to have that fire sale, see what kind of cash you get from the stuff, and put that towards the purchase of new stuff, furniture, etc. Um, 2011, the economist in me, Mr. Montemiro, climbed up a ladder, looked on your roof, came back with not real bids, but came back with prices for a new roof for the fire station and this building. And I think the estimates at that time were around 30. And I'd like to see, it seems to me, that to protect your new carpet, you'd want a new roof before you put new carpet. So I'm a little perplexed by the priority, if indeed you need a new roof. I haven't heard anything about that again for many, many years after Tom Geisling threw some patch on it. The generator, I like the idea that you're able to save money and use some public facilities fees on it, but this isn't doing what your other generator did. The sheriff station, your offices, the fire department, and Well 8. So what happens to those other buildings when you have an extended power outage? I know you can bring in trailer generators. Could have done that all along. But, you know, I think you would have had a longer discussion about that and really what are the goals for a new generator and how it addresses all your obligations during an emergency. Your staff report talks about an expense that related to unanticipated contingencies related to payment to prior year health costs for prior district employee. That is a settlement with Marie McGrath that's never been reported on, and I can't tell from this document how much money that was, but I think that's public record, and I'd like to know. And then the time that she didn't work here and nobody worked here in her position was a savings, and I don't see that that's quantified to be able to do these administrative things that you want to do with maybe carpet or... You're just reallocating the funds, but I'd like to see that number quantified as well.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tucker. Jennifer, please.
Okay. Madam President, so does that close public comment?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Unless you'd like to talk.
No.
Tony.
I actually want to apologize for the Well 8 emergency generator. I refer to it that because of the location. What it does supply, and once Pavel corrected me, supplies power to this facility, which is the fire department, and the sheriff's station. It will not supply power to Well 8 itself.
That's
so
right.
I just want to get that clear. I made a mistake. It's because of the location, I refer to it as Well 8 emergency generator.
Okay.
Thanks, Tony. And for purposes of this agenda item, I'm just discussing general budgetary issues.
Yes.
In terms of some of the details that Ms. Tacker was asking, those would really be addressed when we bring the generator back as a separate agenda item in the future.
That's right.
So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Tony. Jen.
One of my questions was clarified there. But then I was also curious, is staff spending any time on Sand District anything right now? Or as of not being paid for?
I went to a couple meetings on the efforts that are moving forward on the redundancy project. And similar, I'm going to some meetings with PISML on the reclaimed water project. But that's really the only, you know, Sand District related efforts. Tony communicates with them on, you know, operational side of stuff. But
okay, but just in terms of their billing, we're not doing it.
Yeah, you know, a couple months when they were preparing, I think in December for their Prop 218 notice, we gave them some data that they asked for in terms of addresses and customer information that we had. Whatever we had, we provided to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great. Sorry, I was just putting that in the calendar. So, no more public comments, so I'll entertain a motion. Do one of you guys want to give it a shot?
Well, my motion would be to approve staff recommendations.
On C?
Yep. Yes.
A second.
8C, seconded by Director Angelo. Let's do a roll call vote. That's a recommendation of Mr. Minery.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Luce?
Yes. It's 5-0. Staff recommendation. Okay. How about we do, if it's okay, can we do public comment on closed session, and then we can just adjourn and go to closed session?
Sure.
We were going to take a quick break, but...
Right, I'm just wondering if you'd want to go ahead and just address the other last remaining agenda items first, and then do public comment on closed session, but it's your call, of course.
What agenda?
9 and 10.
9 and 10?
No. Yeah.
Right.
So as a group on... Ms. Tucker had asked the question regarding the sample where the ice had melted. And that was written correspondence that I thought it was on last meeting's agenda. It might have been. But in any case, what happened is we wanted to make sure it was on the agenda because...
Last meeting.
Central Coast Water Authority.
That was the last meeting.
Yeah. Just as a real quick explanation, though.
Okay.
Because it's... I'm especially sensitive to... when we're notified of violations associated with water quality standards. And essentially what happened is the Central Coast Water Authority, who operates the treatment plant for the State Water Project, was cited on a failure. But it wasn't a water quality failure. It was a procedural failure. So what happens is you have to pack some of your samples in ice. And they did that, and when it got down to the lab, the ice had melted, but the sample was not usable. And so the lab had sent CCWA a notification that it was a non-usable sample, and CCWA missed that notification. I'm not sure if it was email or how. I think it was email. And so the CCWA did not resample then. And so they were cited for that procedural violation, but they haven't had any water quality violations that they would have to be notified. Nevertheless, because they didn't do the sampling they were required to do, they had to send out notifications, and so that's what I had included in correspondence previously, because that's the time. If it's on the agenda, it's included, then you know the public has the ability to see it and read it.
Right.
But that's what that notification was about, and that was also reported at Zone 3 and to all the other agencies as well.
Okay. Thank you for that. Explanation. Okay. So that was the only written communication we had?
Yeah, that was really responding to the question.
Okay. And does anybody want to do public comment on closed session items? Ms. Tucker.
Good evening again, and I promise this is the last time tonight.
Last chance.
I know.
I have to smile at that one.
I'm kind of curious about the timing of this. It doesn't seem like it's an annual review, and so I'm curious who asked for it. Pavel could have, or any of you could have. And I guess I'll just wait to hear what comes out of it, but just as a reminder, Mr. Ogren received a $5,000 a year raise last July, and he's scheduled to get another one this July, another $5,000 annual raise this July, and then he's going to hire somebody to take over the accounting position that is part of his job description that he wrote, and that when you talked about it, and we didn't talk about it at the time, he wanted it to be a neutral transaction to hire the new person, and whatever is left over he would keep in his salary, because that, depending on the skill of that person, they may be at a lower rate or a little bit higher. Windows, $65,000 to $78,000, I think it was. So whatever the difference is, he's going to get. But when we were calculating all that, we forgot to add in the $5,000 that he's going to get in July. So that neutral rate includes that additional $5,000. And in this district, every dollar counts. And I just want to underscore that $5,000 a year is a lot of money in this town especially. And even among your staff, I can't imagine how it is to work shoulder to shoulder with someone who makes a tremendous amount of money more than you do.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. Okay, if we don't have any more public comment, we're going to now adjourn into closed session. But I'd like to hear from Mr. Minery.
Yes. President Lucy will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957, performance of evaluation of the general manager.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight.